Welcome to Growth Uncut, a podcast that interviews different people from around the world to share their views on personal growth. We feel passionately about connecting communities and raising awareness around social justice, humanity, and relationships. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Sarah Lewis. Hello.
Hello, hello. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Yes, it's really weird to be on my podcast, but as a guest. So yeah, I'm really excited about it. But you did it so beautifully. I think we need to
Oh,
continue in this
thank
realm. Yeah.
So to kick off, Sarah, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So I'm a bit of a muggle, to be honest. So I'm a kind of hybrid of lots of different things. So I kind of started off working within probation. So I used to work in offender programs and worked in the community where I obviously met yourself within probation, and absolutely loved that. And then from that, I was given the opportunity to go and work at university as a senior academic. So I went and taught undergraduates in terms of criminology, psychology, and also trainee probation officers. So again, really enjoyed that, and alongside that did my PhD. So I focused mainly on relationships within kind of rehabilitative settings or correctional settings, and looked at ruptures and when things go wrong, how might we mend those ruptures in order to kind of promote growth. And I then went to Norway and found these most, you know, inspiring prisons and people within them. And from that research spanned over kind of 2-3 years, I then left the university and I set up on my own. So I am now the director, which sounds very grown up. I'm the director of Penal Reform Solutions, which is my company. And I've been working since 2016 as a criminologist and prison reformer or penal reformer. So yeah, that's pretty much me in a nutshell.
Well, you say that's pretty much you in a nutshell. Are you able to just tell us a little bit more about Penal Reform Solutions and the work that you've been undertaking in that role?
Yeah, so we started something called the Growth Project. So from the lessons of Norway, we basically looked at what aspects of the environment promoted personal growth. And from that, we kind of got these kind of key principles, which focused really on meaning, relationships, connection, and connecting with the environment and kind of spaces around. And from that, we then went into an English prison that was really struggling at the time. And we carried out a growth program, which basically recruited kind of those that lived there, those that worked there, families, to basically, you know, bring about change within that organization and to kind of nurture the idea of belonging and trust and connection and relationships. So that was the kind of pilot. At the same time, I was working over at the Council of Europe, so designing some programs over there for those convicted of terrorism and female prisoners, as well as those on long-term sentences, which I was absolutely enlightening. I absolutely met some incredible people during that time. And yeah, since then, I guess it's moved into really focusing on creating a real kind of social movement. So that idea of doing preventative work, so looking at those principles and how we may nurture those in young people so that we can divert them away from crime, as well as what we can do to create prisons in a way that makes them more hopeful places, more meaningful places, but focusing specifically on relationships and connection and humanity, I guess. So I set up the Growth Alliance, which of course you are a founding member of also, so you know all about the Growth Alliance. But I guess I set that up because for me, it's about getting people together that have got the same vision and doing social good and doing our best to reduce social harm. So yeah, we do a lot of stuff, and we feel really, really passionately about the work that we do. But ultimately, it's about building relationships and connections and raising awareness around prisons and the issues that exist there, I guess.
Yeah. I think probably through a lot of what you've said, people would be able to guess at what your views about this are. But I guess just to, again, sort of summarise, what does personal growth mean for you?
You know what? It is really difficult, and you know we talk about growth every day, and it's really hard to when you ask someone to kind of summarize it because there's so much to it. But for me, it is about finding meaning. There's something about finding that purpose, finding that direction, finding what you want and what kind of person you want to be. So I think there's something about the vision, and then it's about, I guess, getting there and how we do that through the connections that we have and the relationships that we have, and nurturing those relationships to kind of move people forward, get people to think about who they are and that they have worth and that they are important and they are loved. And I use loved very much intentionally, and through that, creating a really safe space where people can be brave, they can take positive risks, they can learn from those mistakes. I think growth is not necessarily just about the positive stuff. I think it's also about when things are difficult, when there's adversity, when there's challenge. It's about what we learn from that and how we mend those ruptures, how we get back up, how we utilize the environment, the people around us in order to do that. So growth for me is an utter energy. It's an energy that we are living, rather than just surviving. I think it's about that real thirst for knowledge and thirst for something more, to move forward in life. That's what I would really say growth is.
And I guess, like, linking to that then, in terms of understanding a little bit about where that comes from, it's just, what do you value in life then? What's important to you?
I mean solely relationships, really. Connecting with people is massive for me. You know, my life is consumed, and I'm happy that this is the case, consumed by building connections and giving, and also, you know, getting so much back from those relationships. So I value everything that I do. I feel privileged to be going into prisons and supporting people, but I also really value the support I get back from people. I think that's something that I really didn't really anticipate. You know, when I kind of said, oh, you know, I'd like to start a social movement, I didn't expect people to kind of stand by my side and say, do you know what, we're going to support you in this, and we're going to dedicate, you know, our lives or our work or our, you know, aspects of our lives to that kind of vision, really. So I value relationships wholeheartedly in the work that I do. And I guess that extends into the research that I do. So all of the research that I guess I've done since my PhD has always been about involving people. And I kind of think the more people you include and the more voices that you hear, the more you can co-create something that is really meaningful. And for me, I think there's something about making research really accessible and creating feedback, you know, feedback loops or disseminating research in a very quick and understandable way so that everyone feels included. I think it's about the language that we use, can sometimes exclude certain people from that community or that academic community. And I think it's something about having real conversations, illuminating those, and getting everyone involved in the design of it, in the implementation of it, in the sharing of it. And I've gained so much from that. I've learned so much from that. A classic example is when COVID kind of kicked in, two individuals, one of which was my old student, called Alex. He kind of got in touch and said, oh, my placement's kind of been stopped, because he was going to do a placement in a local prison. And could they do a placement with us? And they were two student social workers, Natasha and Alex. And do you know what? Having them on the team for the period of time, you know, we had, you know, maybe 6 months with them, I learned so much more about social work, around, you know, children's services, about their views on, you know, prisons, on how that connects to the work that I do. And that just wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have happened if we didn't have this kind of real value that it's about drawing people in, no matter what kind of aspect of life you come from. Your view is important and your view is valuable, I guess. So that's something that I really value.
I guess that's quite a, I don't know if it's a skill or a quality, but having that open-mindedness that everyone that I encounter has value in some way. It just might not be in the way that I think, or, it may not be, what's the word? in the way that society, I guess, as a whole would think that somebody has value. Does that make
Yeah,
sense?
it does. It does, and I think there's something about openness. I think there's something about being humble to think that, you know, I haven't got all the answers. I kind of talk a lot when I kind of go into prisons. You know, I don't want to be that consultant that imposes things on prisons. I think
Yeah.
it's about setting a safe environment and setting up those conditions and seeing where people go with that and meeting people where they are. You know, that's something that's really important. I think that is a measure of empathy, really. So,
Yeah.
yeah, I think I've gained so much from that and continue to gain so much from that through that approach. So, I feel very lucky to be able to have the people in my life that I have, because they give me so much every day in terms of that learning. So my growth in terms of how much I've grown in the last kind of 4 years specifically has been absolutely huge, compared to maybe where I was before when I was kind of thinking, right, I need to live by a certain set of, you know, maybe more traditional views around, you know, knowledge goes in top journals and, you know,
Yeah.
you need to be punching high and need to be writing in a way that highlights to other people that I am an academic, instead
Yeah.
of maybe writing through my authentic voice and saying that this is what I believe from my heart in light of what I've seen and heard. So yeah, it's a big one for me.
There's just so much that I want to say in response to that, because I think I guess, like with any institutions, there are kind of ways where you should do things. So in some ways, is there a vulnerability in sticking your neck out and saying, actually, I'm going to do it differently?
Yeah, I think there is, absolutely. I remember when I first started at the university, it was probably about a year in, as a senior academic, and kind of thinking, do you know what? I really struggling to fit in. I just feel like this kind of maverick or this kind of outlier that isn't maybe quite meant to be here. And I remember a magazine in my head of department's table on his coffee desk, and he said, "Oh, there's an article in there for you, Sarah." And it said, "If you fit, do you feel you don't fit in academia?" And I was just like, "Oh my God, thank you so much. That's very kind of you." But I kind of thought only I knew that this secret thing where I was trying to, you know, I'm trying to fit in, but ultimately everyone realised that probably no, you are a little bit, you know, you are a bit of an outlier. And I find that really interesting now as a mother, you know, particularly with my daughter. Who is very eccentric and very different in the way in which she approaches life and looks at things in a really different way, really embracing that difference. Whereas, you know, I almost felt I needed to design it out in order to belong. Whereas
Yeah.
I kind of think now is, you know, you find your feet, you'll find the people that you belong to when you go into, you know, a specific job or you meet specific people, you'll know who those people are. But this search to have to fit in, I think is, you know, I think we all struggle with that, and I still struggle with
Yeah.
it. But I think I feel so. I think Norway, going to Norway and having, you know, I went to Bastoy on my own. I never flown on a plane on my own. I went to essentially a foreign country, to do research that I didn't really, you know, it was co-constructed. So ultimately, I didn't know what I was going to be doing. I knew the process I wanted to take, but I was alone for the first time in my life. You know, I met my husband when I was 16, so I've always been in a relationship, and had my kids around me in the last 13 years. And
Yeah.
I'm sitting in this island prison in a different country on my own, just thinking, what am I doing? You know, like I don't fit in on any level here, and yet there was
Yeah.
something there. That's something there that fit. There was something there in terms of the environment, in terms of being there and wanting to be there. Just thought, you know what, that was the place where I realized that that's where my authentic self, I guess, was kind of grown for maybe the first time. So it was a profound experience in terms of my own identity transformation, and it will remain a significant memory for forever, really.
So I guess from that then, there's almost something about growth that is about taking yourself completely out of a comfort zone and trying things differently,
Yeah.
challenging
Yeah,
yourself.
I think so. I mean, Cam's podcast, who I think we did the last podcast that's been published, Cam talks about his journey,
Yeah.
I guess his journey of desistance, and even, you know, him talking about even
Yeah.
the even me eating different things. You know, it wasn't just about changing the way I was, changing the people I was with. And I kind of think when you are, I don't look back at it and think, oh, it was a step of bravery that I did that. It was something that I longed for. You know, I wanted to be in Norway researching. And then all the fear kind of kicked in
Yeah.
afterwards, really. But I think there's something about being uncomfortable. We grow when we're uncomfortable. And if we give ourselves space to learn, I guess, I think that's the thing, isn't it? Sometimes we can jump into an
Yeah.
environment and feel uncomfortable and not learn anything from it. But I think, yeah, I wanted to go there to learn, and I stepped out of that comfort zone in order to do it, and I gained so much from it.
I literally could listen to you talk about your story all day long, but I'm conscious that we need to rein ourselves
Yeah,
in.
be it forever.
You've kind of alluded to some of these bits as you've gone through, but can you tell us who inspires you or has inspired you and why?
Yeah, so again, this is a really difficult. I think, I mean, in terms of the kind of the maybe the classic response or predictable response, I think my parents were instrumental in terms of inspiring me and continue to inspire me. You know, my dad reads everything that I ever write, helps me with that. My mum is a constant in my life. She's the kindest person I know. So I think there's something there about my parents that has kind of created that kind of solid foundation. I think the second kind of bubble, to talking COVID language, the second bubble that I would say of
Infiltrated all areas.
would be a selection of governors that I have met along the way, particularly over the last 4 years, and that would be James, Steve, Nick, Nicola, and Ralph. And I'm inspired in equal measure when I'm in their company, but I kind of think in terms of thread that they all have, there is that energy, there is that passion and that courage and that humanitarian kind of perspective that, you know, I can talk about as a prison reformer really easily, but how they operationalize it, how they live that out on a day-to-day basis being a governor of a prison, which I can't even comprehend as
Yeah.
a challenge in its own right. I am utterly inspired by them on a regular basis, just in terms of how much resilience they have and how they just continue. They continue no matter how much restriction they get, no matter how much harm takes place, they are always willing to learn. That is, I admire greatly in them as people. So they would be my second lot, but I think the biggest inspiration I'd have to say are my colleagues. And I call them colleagues, and they come from all over the place, really. We have something called the growth team. So when I first went to work in English prisons, we set up the growth team, and people could join essentially. And it was this idea that people that were passionate in prison reform, it could be staff, so it could be prison officers, it could be teachers, it could be anyone, it could be residents, so people in prison, and prisoners' families. And we have kind of got this kind of collection, this team that I've got at the moment that some, you know, the majority of which have been in prison. Some of them are families of prisoners currently. Some of them are currently residing in prison. Also, you know, practitioners as well. So in terms of Carrie Anne, who remains an inspiration for me and my rock. But I think in terms of why they inspire me, I've learnt resilience from these individuals. They are the most, you know, they are the most passionate people in terms of the work that they do, and just that energy to kind of get back up. They refuel me on a daily basis. So I am privileged to have them on the team. They are essentially an extended family, and yeah, they're awesome. They are awesome.
Resilience, in itself as a term is a bit as a term, I guess, in academia that's I don't know, almost become a bit of a buzzword,
Yeah.
and I guess in practice to an extent as well. What would you, how would you kind of term or define resilience?
Yeah, I really struggle. I do struggle with using the term resilience, and I think the problem with it, for me is that the problem with it for me is that invariably we kind of use it as a very tokenistic term. You know, this idea that something goes wrong,
Yeah.
and therefore you need to be able to bounce back. And I don't believe that. I think there's something about feeding. It's about learning. It's about growing forward. There's something about the whole idea of bouncing back. It's a bit like rehabilitation or reintegration. It's all this idea of going back to somewhere else that you were once there. So I guess for
Yeah.
me, there's something more around that kind of more. The academic literature is talking about proactive resilience, which is this idea that you build these blocks and you build this kind of strength and you ground yourself so that ultimately when challenges take place, you adopt a growth mindset or you can kind of fight off invariably the challenges that we face. I think specifically talking to those that have lived in prison that now are part of the PRS family, I think for me, they have been through so much, whether that's trauma or being let down or being in a system that has failed them, whether that is the system of
Yeah.
education or care or prison, but they have been in a system that has let them down, and yet their strength to continue is the bit that kind of overwhelms me. I just think there's something there that is really impressive. That I can't really put my finger on, but I think there's something about adversity and the way in which we manage it and the way in which we kind of learn from it that is really important. And the stuff on post-traumatic growth, which is the stuff that I'm really into at the moment, particularly as we move out of
Yeah.
COVID, you know, how we can collectively grow and how we can kind of fuse those ideas of being inclusive, so grow as in an inclusive way. Rather than at this idea of, you know, pockets of people, you know, BAME populations or female prisoners or, you know, dangerous offenders or whatever, all these labels that we throw around, it's about
Yeah.
for me that it's about for me the that kind of collective strength, but also being very grounded so that we learn from problems, but we also are stronger for it next time around, if you see what I mean.
Oh, I again could chat to you all day, I'm conscious of time and I'm conscious of get, and I also feel that I need to say that I am currently cradling a baby who has just filled his nappy. So that wasn't me.
It was so. It was such a newborn. It was such a newborn experience as well. It brought back so many memories. I thought, hey, I recognise that sound.
Well, I kind of thought we'd got away with it, and then I heard your voice change, and I thought, no, she's definitely heard. We need to acknowledge this, or everyone's going to think I've got wind.
Yeah, no, that's fine. We're going to embrace it. I'm not even going to cut that bit out. We're not. It's going to be a proper
Oh,
growth uncut.
please don't cut it out because I don't want everyone to think I've got gas, goodness sake.
Oh my God, it's beautiful.
Oh, it is beautiful. Well, therein lies a challenge. I'm overcoming a challenge right now. But Sarah, what have been some of your biggest challenges in life? And what have you learnt from it?
Oh, lots of challenges along the way, I guess. But I would say probably physically, I've probably struggled the most, really. So when I was 9 months old, I was diagnosed with something called hemiplegia, which is a slight paralysis on one side of your body, which is my right side. So it was pre-birth, so I was actually breech. And my mum went to the doctors to be turned, like externally turned. And he was really heavy-handed. And my mum got really upset. And he basically said, you know, sort yourself out, you hysterical woman. And from that, I know,
Wow.
yeah. So that's packed with so much stuff, isn't it? In its own right. But
Yeah.
from that experience, I had a bleed on my brain, and it caused this kind of paralysis.
Wow.
So, pretty much all my life, I guess I've had it, you know, to my knowledge, in terms of you know, growing up, I really struggled walking when I was pretty young. I had a lot of physio. I had real kind of problems with just generally my kind of mobility, and I'm just a bit kind of wonky in terms of my posture. So obviously then having children, I have problems with my back and my legs and my hips and all that kind of jazz. So things have always been a bit tricky. And I guess from that experience, I always remember my dad growing up saying, "I'm going to give you a challenge. You know, I want you to play this piece on the piano," which obviously for someone that has got a partial paralysis is actually really difficult to do. But he would always set me these little challenges, and it would almost just move me forward just a little bit. You know, that kind of idea of kind of incremental kind of growth ultimately as I kind of overcame all these obstacles. Then he would be really proud of me, and that would be the best feeling in the world. So I think I learnt, you know, I guess I learnt the basis of getting back up, stepping back up, and keeping going. I think is probably where I've kind of got that from. And then I guess things got a bit tricky. Things got a bit trickier. So when I left university, it was a bit of a tough time, and I was diagnosed from that with fibromyalgia. And anyone who has fibromyalgia will kind of know a lot about it in terms of just its complete, you know, you can't plan for it really. You kind of wake up in a day and your head is foggy and you feel like this kind of, you know, your charger has been pulled in terms of any kind of energy that you've got. So my body is failing me, I guess, in the most brutal terms. But I think what I learned from that is that I can't do this on my own. You know, if this is the way it's going to be, and I'm going to get this, I'm going to have this for the rest of my life, and I'm going to struggle with this. I've always, as you know, Julie, I've always been maybe quite high paced in terms of, you know, I've always been a bit of a rush, bit of a rush in terms of getting stuff done and doing good and getting out there. And my body is ultimately not equipped to deal with the amount that my head is wanting to do. So that is incredibly, that is massively challenging in terms of the frustration and just generally just that real difficulty of wanting to do so much more, but physically not being able to do it, and having to put those plans in place and having to be disciplined and having to have boundaries, which are all things that I probably have not got great skills in, maybe. I've had to learn those things. But I think I've also learnt from it. If because I can't do it on my own, if that's the premise that we're kind of working on, is that ultimately you're going to need to do it with other people. And you know, the Growth Alliance was one of those things that it's about getting people to stand by you. It's about getting the team on board in terms of what they can give and how they can carry different parts of it. And I kind of think, you know, looking back on the classic prison reformers, we are traditionally seen with, you know, Elizabeth Fry, for example, amazing woman. I think she had something like 13 babies, which in its own right is pretty amazing, let alone how
Wow, I
that is
didn't realize
amazing, isn't it? I think it was either 12 or 13, but it was definitely more than 10.
Makes me feel a bit sick.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of think, as well as going into prisons and educating women and making clothes for prisoners, and you know, she was, I still have a £5 note framed because she was on the £5 note before Winston Churchill was added. And I still have her in my office just to remind me of what an incredible woman she was. But I think there's something about doing it on your own that through history we've kind of highlighted that we you know, we're still in the position that we're in. We've still got a lot of work to do. And I think if you do it on your own, then maybe there are limitations to that. So, you know, whilst fibromyalgia is tough stuff, and whilst my hemiplegia doesn't help the situation, I kind of think it has kind of forced me to look sideways and think, do you know what? I'm going to need lots of people behind me if I really want this to happen, if I really want this kind of movement to take hold, and for us to show, you know, be kinder and more humane and more just in our society. So yeah, it's taught me a lot, which is, you know, that's post-traumatic growth for you in action. But I'm sure I've got a lot more to learn. I've still get caught up, you know, where I don't listen to my body, or I get consumed by all, or I do too much, and I get regularly berated by the people that love me to say, you need to take some time out and rest. So I still not got it sussed, but yeah, I'm getting there slowly.
There's so many things I could say to respond to that. I guess the most hard-hitting thing for me is that someone who's worked alongside you for so many years and just like had no idea of the extent of some of those physical barriers. And without knowing that, you would be somebody that I'd go, I don't know how she does it all in a day. Like, how does she manage to fit it all in? How does she manage to wear all of these hats? How does she manage to progress and move forward? So I guess then when you kind of know the full extent of that as well, even more so, I'm like, oh, bloody hell, how did you? And you're like, you just like made the comparison with Elizabeth Fry and kind of said, you know, she juggled all of these things and did all, but yeah, you're also one of those people who other people look at and go, I have no idea how you do it. And maybe the answer is, as you say, that you work very collaboratively with people and are able to see the value in people that perhaps other people don't, and are able to kind of use people's power to combine and make a bigger power, I guess. We sometimes use the analogy of Thundercats and Captain Planet, don't we, of combining our strengths together to be stronger together, I
I
guess.
mean, even this podcast, even the podcast, you know, I remember like early doors COVID, writing an email to some of the most incredible people essentially on the planet in my book. So, you know, Shad Maruna, Fergus McNeil, Ben Crewe, and say, you know, Avengers Assemble was the title. And I kind of think there is something about all of these incredible people coming together. And you know, I joke a lot about Endgame with the team. I said, you know, it's a bit like Endgame, you know, like when you've got all your circles and all the people are coming through. So you've got, you know, you've got your families of those who've got loved ones in prison, and you've got those, you know, former prisoners, and you've got all of these people, and all of, and we're coming together. That's the thing. It's about connecting people up. It's about sharing that vision, and through that, that's really positive. And I think, you know, that reminds me, I guess, of a professional challenge, which is when you recruit people that come out of prison. You know, I knew that there's so many difficulties, there's so many obstacles in there in my way as an employer that I would never even have anticipated. And I kind of think if I didn't have the knowledge that I had around assistance and hope and belief and strength and all of that kind of stuff, things like DBS checks taking 7 months for one of my guys. You know, just the delay that would have in terms of just generally his employability, working with us, or just that, like you say, that kind of power dynamic. You know, like, you know, recruiting people in prison to come out, not only about leveling the playing field and getting them to feel as equal colleagues, which is ultimately what they are, but it's almost about that kind of active commitment to balancing that playing field and doing an awful lot more in order to raise them up so that they do feel like that is the case, that they feel that they are equals and they feel valued and they feel as important as maybe you know, a practitioner or as another academic on the team. I think it's so it, I think it's great that people have belief in change, and it's great that people have belief in relationships and have hope for people. But I would say in terms of, I guess, practitioners, I think there's definitely something there about us actively demonstrating it. We have to get out there and actively do it, because that's the stuff that levels the playing fields. That's the stuff that brings hope. That's the stuff that builds connections. Whereas, you know, being silent about it, you know, doesn't give it the impact that it could possibly have, which is really powerful. You know, we know relationships are integral to growth. So, being more open about what we're grateful for, or what strengths people have, or why you love people, or you know, what you learn from people, I think is just really important. And you know, gratitude is so significant to happiness and meaning. So yeah, it has been a real challenge. And yeah, you know, for all the employers out there that may be thinking, you know, should I employ former prisoners? Absolutely, yes, absolutely, because that loyalty, that commitment, that desire to, you know, to show that the strengths that they have and be the person they want to be is the most rewarding thing that I have in my life. You know, it is so rewarding to see people grow. That is my heroine. I absolutely love it. I love that, just watching other people grow. If I could do that all my life, I would be a happier person for it. So yeah.
I guess the thing is as well, when you're surrounded by people and working with people who are doing what they absolutely love doing, that's infectious, isn't it? and can be very motivating for the next person to kind of think, right, I'm gonna achieve what I want to achieve, because I guess you pass that energy on,
Yeah, and
haven't you?
I think even in
Essentially.
organisations, what we found when we worked at the prison, our first prison doing the growth project, I think what was just amazing was that once you got a certain amount of people together, and there needed to be a real understanding on who those people were and the level of influence they had, and but once you got a collection together of people that had that energy and that hope, the whole place became alive. It ignited. It was almost like that kind of forest fire effect that you just needed that match to set it off, and then with that it became, yeah, absolutely completely infectious, and it was the feeling of the place. It wasn't anything that I could have written in a quantitative measures, really. It wasn't anything I can even really describe in language, so even qualitatively it's difficult to kind of explain. But when you walk into a place that has previously really struggled, and you feel energy and hope and relationships just moving in the air, it's really, that's what happens in Norway when you step into Bastøy prison. It's thick with trust. That's, it's almost like this fog of like positivity that from someone who's, I guess, seeing it through a rehabilitation perspective, it was something that I'd never experienced. I'd worked in English prisons before going to Bastøy, and just completely overwhelming as a place, from a practitioner's perspective. So
I guess particularly a practitioner that's worked in a very risk averse culture.
yes, yeah, I think that's the thing, and I think there's something about risk that we need to be starting to kind of change the narrative there in terms of risk just generally, I think. But I remember going to a parole hearing of one of my guys, who's out now, and he was an IPP prisoner. He had a 2-year sentence, and he served 12 years over tariff, which in itself is heartbreaking. And I remember sitting in his parole, and that was my first experience of sitting on a parole, which I promptly cried once I got out for the whole way home, because it was just such an experience that really stood out for me. But I think one of the bits, whilst I was talking about this guy and saying, some of the stuff that he'd been doing, I said he's been taking some really positive risks, and everyone panicked, oh my God, risks, what do you mean by risks? What risks has he been taking? And I said, well, in terms of his confidence, and in terms of his leadership abilities, and in terms of communicating with people that he didn't know, all of those things, it goes back to that uncomfortable space, doesn't it? It's about stepping out of that and taking, just because it's a risk doesn't mean it has to be negative. It's about what can we gain from just doing something a little bit. With every deviation, there's a shift, and we know that. And I kind of think if we can just adopt that idea and look at risk in a much more positive way, and focus more so maybe on need and meeting unmet need, I think, that's the stuff that's really important. There's people in prison that, whether they cut themselves, whether they get up on a roof, whether they get themselves down the seg, invariably it's because their needs have not been met along the way. And that's not, I'm not blaming prisons or people or whatever. I think we've got to a system where, because of the structures and because of the system that has become how it is, it's very difficult for people to meet those needs, whether that's seeing their families, whether that's getting their number put on their phone, whether that's getting their property from reception. All of these things that to me and you would be really simple because we've got mobile phones and we've got a wardrobe, but to them is just completely different. So I think, yeah, I'm ranting now. I do appreciate that, but I think it's really important.
I just want to respond in so many ways and then like rein it in, Julie, rein it in.
Yeah, it's hard. So much to say.
Oh, it's really hard, I know. So if you were just to pull out one thing then that you think that would improve our communities to grow and make them safer and happier, what do you think that would be?
Oh, it's such a difficult question. I don't know why I asked everyone to ask
I
this. It's
know.
so difficult being on the other side of it. I think there's so much there. I think there's so much there about being open to learn from in the most unusual
Yeah.
places, you know, like to take positive risks, to give back, you know, even if it's the smallest thing, you know, a smile to a guy that's sitting on the street, or, you know, I don't know, the smallest things that people could maybe do make all the difference. You know, when we look at the literature, when we look at assistance, and I guess that kind of journey towards assistance, it is the small things, those little tokens of kindness that
Yeah.
stand out. They are stand out in all of the hecticness and all of the kind of harm and pain that's maybe they're experiencing. And I don't think we fully realize how important those little things are, you know. And I think that would be it. It would just be kindness and openness to change, and kindness in terms of to people, you know, irrespective of whether they deserve it or not. You know, I think we're, you know, we've I think this whole idea of people don't deserve kindness, you know, I think everyone deserves kindness, everyone deserves to feel loved. There's hope for everyone. I've never met anyone in my career of working with people, and that includes some really tough people along the way that I don't feel that could change for the benefit. And you know, I think just the little things matter. So maybe that would be to
Yeah.
start with the little things and then work up.
I guess ultimately, with like from a purely like selfish perspective, if you're make as an individual, if you're making a choice, an active choice every day, like you say, to do those little things and smile at the person on the street, or I don't know, like a small token to somebody of your appreciation of something that you've done, or just acknowledging those things. I just think that probably you go to bed at the end of the day feeling like a happier person within yourself. So even if you're starting out from a purely selfish point of view, like do those things because it will make you feel
Yeah,
better.
and it does.
And I guess the better that we feel in ourselves, I guess the more able that we are to give to other people then ultimately. And I think that kind of then breeds in an open outward spiral that you would hope is infectious and passes on to the next
Yeah.
person, you'd hope.
I got given a token that I still have in my bag from one of the governors at Nicola up at Wood Hill, and it's called a tsunami of love. And it's this tiny little token, and it says pass on the kindness, which I selfishly haven't passed on because I absolutely love the token and I kind of think it's an inspiring. But every time I see it, I think of her, and I think it's very sometimes it's we're very selective in who we're kind to, and I understand there's loads of reasons for that,
Yeah.
but I think sometimes it's about being kind to the people that don't expect it, that is the stuff that's going to make our communities safe places. I think
Yeah.
you know, it's very easy sometimes to be safe and be kind and be comfortable with that kindness. But I would say live uncomfortable kindness, you know, be kind in unusual places, and I think that's when we'll start feeling something a bit different maybe.
I think live uncomfortable kindness is just such a great way to like end this podcast, essentially. That's just such a great phrase. I
Cool.
love it.
Can I just say one more thing just before we go?
Please say whatever you like. It's your podcast.
I guess just in terms of a little bit around, you know, if you're interested. So just in terms of whether you're an undergraduate listening to this as part of your studies, or whether you're a probation practitioner listening to this as part of your training, or whether you're, you know, public, whatever it may be, the Growth Alliance is an inclusive, I guess, alliance that focuses on promoting you know, social good and reducing social harm, and you know, we have lots of different people involved in that. I think just I guess a little bit of a kind of suggestion that if people want to get involved, then just get in touch with us.
Please do.
Penal Reform Solutions, you'll find our contact sheet or whatever. But I think, you know, I think the reason one of the reasons we've kind of founded the Growth Alliance was to inject hope into the work that we do across criminal justice, and I think there's lots of people that can do that. So in terms of
Yeah.
feeling uncomfortable maybe and sending me an email, then please do. and get in touch so that we can, we can all be part of the solution, really.
And I guess as a member of the Alliance, what I really like is that we're an alliance. We've sort of defined we're there because we what we have in common, we have certain things in common in terms of goals and values. But like you say, we all come from very different backgrounds, and whether that be professionally, whether that be people with lived experience, there's all kinds of professionals. Like you say, students have been involved in that as well. So I guess there's as somebody who's come from practice, I think in any profession you kind of get a bit of a mould, don't you? So defining the alliance like not based on a particular profession, but in terms of shared values, means that that mould is broken, and that you have people with all kinds of different lived experiences and that can just bring something else to the table. So I guess what I mean is it's not it's the members of that alliance aren't carbon copies of each other, which is really refreshing. And you get to kind of contemplate things from lots of different perspectives, and like you say, people, everybody has value in that space, and enable each other to see things from through different lenses, I guess, which is
Isn't it
great
just?
for my personal growth.
Yeah.
Love
I love
it.
it too. I love it. And the stuff that we did in terms of the next connection campaign. So we do three connection campaigns a year. That's my kind of commitment to connection, I guess. But we've just done one on families of people who have got loved ones in prison. So that's just been published. But also we're doing one on young people. So we're trying to understand how young people see growth and how they, what they get meaning from, and trying to understand young people on the basis that through the understanding we'll gain greater connection with them. So yeah, watch this space. We're doing lots of stuff because we really care. So yeah.
So if people want more information about any of that, of any elements of your work or the work of Penal Reform Solutions, then the website is kind of the best place to go to kind of
Yeah,
get
absolutely.
those bits.
Yep, all the way.
Perfect.
Lovely. Thank you, Julie. Thank you so much for listening. And this is Growth Uncut. And if you want any more information, then please get in touch with Penal Reform Solutions. But thanks so much. I've really enjoyed it. And thank you, Julie, so much for being an amazing host.
Oh, I've really enjoyed it too.
Okay,
Thank
bye.
you.